each time you shop. If you missed any of that information, you can visit kpft.org to learn more. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide. You can also find KPFT on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to tonight's edition of Technology Bites.
Yeah, baby.
I don't even know what just happened.
Oh, it's flicked it. He's in one of his moods.
Space shooting moods?
Who's that new voice?
Oh, what? You guys.
Yeah.
Oh, the FNG returns.
We have rebuilt him from spare parts. He's like mostly the same.
From a calendar perspective, I've been here long enough not to be the new guy anymore, but from an attendance perspective, I just haven't checked enough shows yet.
We had the money. We rebuilt him.
Yeah, I'm really reconsidering getting a Tesla now because evidently it took like 3 weeks to charge it, so you could get back from
how long were you stopped? So I can walk through what happened.
Did you literally walk
after we get the bottles?
When we get past the introductions, I can give you the rundown of my Tesla trip. The short version is everything.
Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Yeah, so Lee hasn't been with us for a while.
He got stuck a handful of weeks ago coming to the show.
It's been work. It's been just work.
Tell us about the power of electricity and automotive.
So roll the show back to 3 weeks ago when we were looking at our watches.
Was it 2 weeks ago?
Was it?
Tell us about the challenges of the hand crank Tesla.
Where'd you go?
So the story was I went to I drove out to Austin 2 Wednesdays ago to interview, not to get sidetracked here, but there's a fellow in Austin named Cody Wilson. He is I forget the name of the little company he runs, Defense General or something like
Sidetrack
that.
Alert.
He basically, Sidetrack alert. Basically, this fellow, Cody Wilson, makes CNC machines that you can take and purchase 80% AR lowers and put them in the CNC machine. It'll drill out the 80% AR lower into a completed unserialized AR lower for personal use. And he's doing it kind of as a big, like, F you to the government and
hey,
he's
NSA.
Got personal protest ATF. Things going on. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's a freedom issue. And so I drove out there to interview him. And the 2 days before the trip, I went to the north side of town where Tesla had their Model X, their SUV press fleet that they were touring through, and drove one. And I mentioned to the Tesla rep, because I get to try out the autopilot for the first time, that, hey, you know, I'm doing this Austin drive in a couple of days. Man, it'd be great if I could. This autopilot would be totally useful.
You did look mono hands. You did that? We got to come back to that. Yeah.
And so, and she was like, well, I mean, we can arrange to get you a car. So it was kind of a twofer trip. It was driving out to Austin to interview this guy, but it was doing it in a very nice P90D Tesla. It's the performance dual motor version with the big battery, and it was all decked out, and it was super nice.
Did they
nice.
Give you, like, the run-through on how to drive and all the special features and, hey, you should charge this at some point?
Well,
like, what?
So, okay, to break down the trip between here and Austin, there is a supercharger, a Tesla-owned supercharger in Columbus, which is not quite halfway. It's more on the Houston side of the trip than the Austin side of the trip, but it's roughly in the middle between Houston and Austin. So I took the car home Tuesday night, plugged it in the garage, and the little 120 outlet I have in the garage doesn't charge the car very fast. It charges at about 4 miles of charge per hour of plug time. So
that's almost like a why bother setting.
Well, I mean, I picked it up at the Galleria, and it was full. I drove it home. That's 30 or 40 miles from the Galleria down to League City. Then I plugged it in, and by the morning, it had cranked back up to full charge. So it gave me enough to, like, you know, kind of top the tank off overnight. So got in the car, drove out, stopped at Columbus, charged up all the way, drove into Austin. And while I was in Austin, you know, I interviewed the guy I was there to interview. And when the interview was over, I was like, hey, I've got this
awesome
Tesla. I
want to go for a joyride.
You want to, like, go try the car out? Because, you know, if you've never seen it, this is really cool. And so we got out, and, like, we were just blazing up and down the freeway outside of Austin, and you know, for
so you were blazing.
You were blazing in the car. No,
you're blazing in the car.
No, whoa. Kind of blazing. We were blasting. No, wait. We were
banging.
We were driving around,
pumping.
A spirited pace, maybe.
So when I dropped the fellow, when I dropped Cody off,
he was draining some battery.
Yeah. When I dropped Cody off, I realized that, you know, oh my gosh, I might not have enough range to get back, because the car is rated for about 200 and, I don't know, if you go by their numbers, 260 miles of range if you drive it exactly 60 miles an hour. If you don't drive at 60 miles an hour, it gets considerably less range.
What coefficient would you say you sacrificed? Actually, probably shouldn't say on air.
Quite a bit. So yeah. the trip from Columbus into Austin is about 90 miles. And so it was about a 180-mile round trip, which should have been well within the range, but we were really dogging on the
You
car.
Knew you'd make it to Columbus, though, right? Or was that iffy when
well,
you were taking off?
Well, so
you go to San Marcos and top up.
I thought about it, because San Marcos has a supercharger and it's a little closer. So you get in the car, you set your destination, and it's got like a software feature in the nav where it'll tell you, like, hey, you may not make your destination. We suggest wow. you go to this charging station instead.
And can you put it in like super econo mode where everything shuts off in the AC?
So I had a choice. Opens the choice up, you can was pedal. To drive to San Marcos, which was only about like 40 miles away. And I could have charged up at San Marcos. But then I would have been in San Marcos, and then I would have had to drive to Columbus to charge up again and then drive home. And it just would have been this huge. And I was like, I'm going to
go. So laziness versus risk. Laziness won.
Yeah, I was like, okay. Do I want to, like, take all the extra time, or I just want to roll the dice and maybe I can make it to Columbus? So I set off to Columbus, and the car started, like, as I was about halfway there, it was like, warning, warning, you will not make your destination. Slow down and reduce speed to ensure battery life.
Silly computer, you don't know what you're talking about.
No, it knew exactly what it was talking about, because I did what it said.
You said, make it happen.
I hauled down.
Give it again.
Well, so what I found out is that the autopilot drives way more efficiently than I do. Like,
I would assume,
you turn the car
yeah.
on auto steer, auto cruise, and I set it also at about 60. So I was making everybody just, you know, everybody was just enraged, blowing past me, because the speed limit on what is that, 71? The speed limit is 75 on that road.
Hey, but you could return gestures with both hands at this point. Yeah. That's fine.
Well, it was funny because on the way out, I was, like, eating breakfast with the autopilot on and, like, driving in stop-and-go traffic because that's really amazing. Like,
is driving, that legal?
I mean, sort of. Well, if you don't touch the steering wheel once every 60 seconds or so, the car freaks out and will, like, turn it off. Or it'll be like, no, you're not, like, touch
not
the steering
attention.
Wheel or you're not paying attention. So, you know, you have to, like, sit there and, like, poke at it.
Excuse
basically.
Me, Tesla, can you show us where the tech journalist touched you?
Good touch, bad touch.
So, although apparently if you put a breakfast sausage on the steering wheel, it thinks that you're touching it.
Maybe.
I wonder if there are hacks, yeah, that you can get away, you know, like throttle clips on motorcycles.
I think it's just an infrared, like touch sensor.
Just tape some hot dogs to the steering wheel.
Maybe. So, yeah, cranked it down to 60 miles an hour, coasted into Columbus with, like, 3 or 4% left. Yeah. And knowing that I had to drive home and then the next morning drive back to the Galleria to drop it off.
You did a full charge.
I did a full charge, which takes... The way the superchargers work is they start off at a huge... They start off... The one in Columbus, they're variable power, but the one in Columbus is... when you first plug in, it dumps like 350 amps and 350 volts. So this, like... You know, ridiculous amount of current into the car.
The town goes dim.
Yeah,
they call it Fukushima mode.
Yeah, pretty much. So and it very quickly will put about 100 miles on the car, and then it ramps the power down, and it'll charge the rest at a much lower rate. But you can get a full charge.
Is that because the batteries won't take it, or is that just
the car
distribution?
Basically explode.
Okay. Okay.
Yes. And man, when you plug it into a supercharger, noises happen in the car that you've never, like all those battery cooling fans that you've never heard before come on. And it sounds like a jet engine because all these fans. Anyway.
I'd imagine two server fans in a server room can just light up room.
Yeah.
So I can imagine probably dozens of, yeah.
So, it's got a liquid cooling pack and it cools. Anyway, whatever. So I charged all the way up. And by the time the complete charge finished, it was like 7 o'clock and I was an hour and a half outside of town at minimum. And was just ready to go home. So, didn't make the show, but I did get to, interview Gun Guy, which I'm going to write up. That was a fascinating experience. And got to do the, got to drive the Tesla with the autopilot. And I have to tell you, it's like a two-function system. It's an adaptive cruise, and it also is automatic steering, and the steering is based on... it looks at lane markers and stuff. It has a couple of cameras on the car. And it also senses vehicles around you with the ultrasonic, basically the kind of parking sensors that's on every car. It has those little ultrasonics all around the perimeter of the car. When you're driving on the freeway, it's really cool. You can twist a little knob and set your follow distance, and the car will follow from a minimum of 2 to a maximum of, I think it's like 7 car lengths. It's super good at watching and move, and like, not, you know, if somebody pulls in front of you, it'll back off, and it has a it'll brake all the way up to stopping, and then it will move again when it detects there's nothing in front of you. And the place that I found that the most amazing was not on the open road. Honestly, I had the big oh my gosh, this is amazing moment was on the South Loop or the South Beltway, going east.
Parkway
in the morning.
Parking lot.
Yeah, when it was, yeah, on the south side of the Sam Houston Tollway, down on the south end, northeast, so westbound, headed out, so I was going to go Beltway 8 around and catch I-10 and go out, and at that time of the morning on the south Beltway, it's, you know, total bumper to bumper, and I had the autopilot thing on, and it'll creep forward with the cars, it'll... You know, kind of keep your place in the flow of traffic. And so I was kind of sitting there, and at first I ate breakfast, and then I kind of like had my phone out, and it was like feeling super rebellious. Like I'm texting while I'm driving and stop and go traffic, and I'm not looking at anything. And the car was keeping pace. And then when the traffic opened up, the car would speed up and reestablish the follow distance from the car in front of it. And then if it slowed down again, it would brake all the way down. You didn't have to do anything.
Did it ever change lanes or honk its horn in anger?
It didn't honk its horn in anger. It'll change lanes if you like push up or down on the blinker.
You have to pay extra for the road rage mode.
Right, yeah. When it, like hands come out and just middle fingers,
robotic
fingers.
Hands.
The heads up display has a really nice set of kind of.
That's what they need. They need to do some outside panels on the sides of the cars where you can, instead of big turn signals, you can be like, you know, like yeah, whatever you, buddy. You know, I think that's what I want. I want paint the chain. Just where I can
it will
dial
change.
In.
It will change lanes for you.
You need more things that drain electricity.
Yeah, exactly.
Like LED.
OLED. It's you pulse it once, it changes, and you just ride that way for a while. Yeah.
Anyway, the autopilot thing. Now, I don't want to talk Tesla up too much because they are not the only OEM that is doing this kind of integrated, you know, full auto driving, like lane keeping assistance plus adaptive cruise. Audi's doing it. BMW has it. Toyota's got it. I think Honda's got one, although I don't know if they have it on any of the U.S. cars. I mean, Tesla's owning the marketing message.
Although Honda has a robot that can drive the cars, I believe.
That's true.
So, Honda's got a Civic that's got auto drive for the highway.
Yeah. So where, I mean, Tesla is dominating, I mean, and their tech works great. You know, I had a great time using it. It worked very well.
Just watch that rear seat.
But yeah, they're owning the marketing message more than anything else here too, because even though, you know, all these other OEMs have this technology, when you are hearing about, like, you know, the self-driving car or whatever, and you're not thinking of, like, Google's little Google car, you're probably thinking about Tesla because they're just on top of their messaging. So anyway, that was my couple Wednesdays ago. It was a fun trip.
Is the X just as sporty as the other ones as far as the engine goes?
Yeah, the X is it's like a crossover SUV. And yeah, it was it had just as much get up, and it's got the 650, 700 horsepower just like the other one does. It's just ridiculous.
That's insane. Yeah, as long as we're talking Tesla, Flick and I looked at each other. So they had the back seat recall. Did they mention that to y'all at all?
I didn't think it was a back seat recall. I thought
it was the rear seat in the X. So it wasn't the full seat.
They said don't use the rear seats until you come to get it.
Well, they have like a funky like system, like the rear. It's really hard to describe, but the rear seats are on kind of like a little like pedestal, and they can move back for you to get into them, and they also like can move forward and like drop down into the floor and fold down to give you more rear cargo space. It looked like a really complicated mechanism. So if there's something
at some point in their testing that the backseat slid on that rail, so they voluntarily recalled.
Yeah, that was the cool thing. So it's a voluntary recall. I think the worry, though, that at least probably Musk has right now is that all the orders on the new series, because they're just so overwhelming, that it's going to be, you know, a recall at the level of the number of models that they put out of the X model versus this new order, it's just going to be insane. So they need to make sure that all the engineering's perfect, everything's perfect, because a recall on that first, you know, affordable model it wouldn't be devastating, but it'd definitely hurt the brand.
It would be a big
deal. It'd be expensive, too.
It'd take the stock, maybe.
Yeah.
And that's, you don't want that.
But still, very cool, you know, whereas you have all these other manufacturers that seem to, like, fight recalls until statisticians say, hey, no, really, this is a problem, you know, beyond, you know, a standard deviation.
Right.
It's cool that Tesla, even though it hadn't happened in the wild yet and nothing's been out there, that they're saying, hey, we have been able to make this happen a couple times, bring them on in. So I think that's kind of neat.
Oh, props for being proactive. I mean, it's a company that very clearly has Musk's fingerprints directly on it, as opposed to, you know, a massive auto conglomerate. And he's still...
They didn't polish him before they handed it off to the journalists?
Yeah, exactly. He still very much seems like he's got, you know, I mean, the man is billionaire and he wants to make more money and, you know, everybody's got their motives. But it does seem like he is genuinely interested in putting out a product that, you know, not to fall too far into the marketing, but it does seem like he's interested in doing something that is very globally impactful, rather than just, you know, spitting out a half-baked electric.
Oh, he wants to be Tony Stark, and I'm all for that. That's fine.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Him and Larry Ellison then can fight.
All right. So now we've got our Lee quota up.
All right, I talked enough. I'm done now.
All right. I don't buy that.
Rest of the show, I'm done.
You cannot silence him once he's here. He could easily be distracted from getting here, but once he's here,
we gave him. Nuke batteries, so yeah, his half-life is probably it's gonna outlive the show.
Well, don't get him started on
the can't turn him off.
There's a couple of other topics. There are a couple of other Lee triggers we can pull later.
when time drags, just say something else.
Or at 8:30 to 8:34.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, well, we're glad you could tune in. We're glad Lee's back. It's nice to have a full house again. So we want to invite you to visit us online at geekradio.com. It's where all the relevant information is, which there's not a lot, but there's pictures and there's things there in the podcast and stuff. So go there. If you want to hang out on IRC, irc.cuckoo.com.
Cuckoo.
And the channel Tech Bites, if you want to do it's the show within a show. If you know how to IRC, you can use your own client, connect to irc.cuckoo.com. Or you can use our client on the website, Java-based. Totally secure, at least for you, not necessarily for us. Feel free to join in the IRC fun, and we're going to have a great show. So what we're going to do now is hand the reins over to Peter Hughes, our on-the-spot correspondent in San Antonio with all the Technology Bites technology news that's fit to be aired on this show. So take it away, InfoShot.
It's the Technology Bites InfoShot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Well, our top story is about a virtual currency, and the virtual currency is called Your Pledges. And, you know, we're coming up on a pledge drive, and we just want to remind you that if you go online and pledge for Technology Bites, that you can cut time off of the fund drive, because if we raise the money before the fund drive even starts, then we don't have to take time out of the show to do fund drive stuff. So you can go to kpft.org and give us that, give us some of your sweet. It's virtual until you go and make the pledge. So please do so. And you can do that anytime in the next week or two and be way ahead of the game. A little follow up on the FBI, Apple, cracking the San Bernardino shooter's iPhone. Rumors have suggested that the FBI had used an Israeli mobile forensics firm called Cellebrite to hack into the iPhone 5C, but new information from the Washington Post suggests that they had the help of, quote, professional hackers, unquote, at least one of which is a gray hat researcher that sells flaws to governments, black market groups, or companies that create surveillance tools. According to sources who spoke to the Washington Post, the hackers told the FBI about a previously unknown software flaw, which was used to, quote, create a piece of hardware, unquote, the FBI used to access the phone via its passcode. The hardware in question allowed the FBI to guess the passcode through multiple attempts without erasing the iPhone. This is similar to what the tool that they had requested to get from Apple. Before finding an alternate way into the iPhone, the FBI demanded that Apple create a new version of iOS that would disable the passcode security feature. Apple was ordered to give the FBI software to disable the erase feature that would have wiped the iPhone after 10 incorrect guesses, eliminate the time added between entry attempts after the wrong passcode was entered, and create a way for the FBI to enter passcodes into the device electronically instead of manually. The other interesting quote, according to the Washington Post, is that the FBI did not need the services of Cellebrite, quote, in this case. And there are other stories that says Cellebrite says that it can crack an iPhone 6 in a similar way. So the story stays interesting, and we'll keep an eye on it. In other exploit news, it may seem like, there's more vulnerabilities and stuff, but the number of attacks that exploited previously unknown software vulnerabilities doubled in 2015, as hackers raced against security defenders to find effective ways to infect end users with malware. This is according to a recently released report. The number of zero-day exploits, what zero-day exploits is because they call it that because software developers have 0 days to release a patch that keeps the, protects the users. They reached an unprecedented 54 zero-day exploits. The year before was 24. 2013 had 23. So it had been fairly stable under, 20 or around 20 or less. The increase was partly caused by the breach of Italy-based zero-day broker Hacking Team, which spilled 6 closely guarded 0 days into the public domain. It also came as Adobe and other developers significantly reduced the time it took to release patches that plugged 0 day holes. So unsurprisingly, the software with the most 0 day attacks last year was Adobe Flash, with 10 of the vulnerabilities, or 17% of all 2015 0 days. This was an improvement. That sounds terrible, but it was an improvement over 2014, which had 12 attacks against previously unknown vulnerabilities in Flash. So the growth in 0 days attacks comes as software developers have sharply reduced the time it takes to patch underlying vulnerabilities. On average, it took just 1 day for them to release a patch in 2015, compared with 59 days in 2014. And then for some reason, it was only 4 days in 2013. So that narrows the window that hackers can use to get a 0 day. Hopefully the day comes when 0 day means that's the one when they start calling them 1 day, because that's as long as they have before the thing gets patched. Wouldn't that be a lovely one day. And then another security thing, and this one kind of ties in with the whole Apple FBI story indirectly, because, you know, more recent Apple phones are supposed to be even more difficult for somebody like the FBI to decrypt or to get into because of hardware components that are part of the overall hardware-software security thing. Well, Microsoft is boosting security through hardware in its Windows 10 PCs and phones. Starting at the end of July, the company is going to require new Windows 10 PCs, tablets, and smartphones to ship with TPM 2.0, which is a hardware-based security layer. TPM has been available for years, mostly on business PCs. TPM 2.0 provides a hardware layer to safeguard user data by managing and storing cryptographic keys in a trusted container. The TPM requirement will be enforced through Windows Hardware the Windows Hardware Certification Program, according to Microsoft. This will have to be implemented in the form of chips or firmware. TPM will be activated by default, although it is not certain if users will have the option to disable it. One of the nice side effects would be that TPM could lead to wider use of two-factor authentication in Windows 10 to log into PCs, applications, and web services. You know, for example, Windows Hello, a biometric authentication technique using face, fingerprint, or iris recognition, could be used along with encryption keys and TPM chips to authenticate users, because obviously it's tied to the specific machine. So it won't be a requirement for devices like Raspberry Pi 3 with Windows 10, with the IoT, the Internet of Things core. Microsoft's also encouraging Windows 10 PC users to move into advanced hardware like Intel Skylake chips, which are more secure than previous platforms. So, the kudos to them, and you know, I think that shows a moving in a good direction on adding that hardware piece to security. And then this next one is a science one, but it's kind of cool, so I moved it up to news. Last week, the Kepler planet hunting spacecraft had a problem that caused it to enter what's called emergency mode, which is something that's only supposed to happen when something's wrong. Because it limits the activity of the probe and it burns through the limited fuel supply at an accelerated pace. This is the first time since Kepler was launched in 2009 that it went into emergency mode. But then on the 11th, NASA announced they had reestablished normal communication and got the spacecraft out of emergency mode. The telescope's communication hardware is once again pointed directly at Earth, which helps a whole lot, and has allowed controllers to put Kepler in operational mode where it consumes far less fuel and will extend its usable life. They don't know why it happened. So they're looking at their telemetry and looking at the information to see if they can figure out what happened. And apparently they got priority when they found out there was a problem. They got a lot of support from other NASA installations turning over time on their systems to solve this. So that's kind of cool. And then I guess this one's a good news story about a bad news story. Republicans in Congress are pushing legislation that would gut the Federal Communications Commission's authority to enforce net neutrality. And on the good news side, that's the bad news side. The White House today issued a policy statement threatening to veto it. Quote, if the president were presented with H.R. 2666, there's a good number for a bill to get rid of net neutrality. H.R. 2, the number of the beast. If the president were presented with H.R. 2666, his senior advisors would recommend that he veto the bill. The bill is titled the No Rate Regulation of Broadband Internet Access Act, and was approved by the Energy and Commerce Committee over objections from Democrats last month. So it may get through the House and Senate and get to the president, but he has said he will not support that and won't sign it. So good news there, you know, because net neutrality, you know, we got to, you know, the reason they want to get rid of it is because of the letting the market really do, you know, that the companies that are internet service providers really have the customer's best interest at heart, and they should be allowed to compete and do what they like. Oh, and then here's this story. Verizon has reportedly switched 1.1 million customers from copper to fiber lines over the past few years under a program it calls fiber is the only fix. But some phone customers have refused to switch to fiber because they prefer to keep their copper lines. And so as a result, Verizon is now apparently refusing to fix problems in the copper infrastructure. Wow, that's called serving your customers and being, you know, responsive to the market, like, you know, where you should, you know, net neutrality should work on the honor system, right? The Philadelphia Inquirer reports that it obtained internal company documents that describe the effort to switch problematic copper lines to fiber. Verizon customers with copper-based landline phones who call for repairs twice in 18 months will be told that their only fix is to replace decades-old copper line with high-speed fiber because Verizon won't fix the copper. They only have a few million copper line customers. The fiber is the only fix policy is responsible for 1.1 million changes to fiber in Pennsylvania and other states. The policy is in place in New York, Massachusetts, Virginia, and Delaware, and is expected to expand to New Jersey, according to the report. So, you know, isn't that interesting? One of the reasons that people prefer copper is because it does work during power outages, because it does do power and data and some of that. So, you know, kudos to Verizon for jacking over their customers by making them switch to, you know, the making them switch to fiber. Now, some customers are suspicious that Verizon is merely trying to upsell them to pricier service, but Verizon says customers can buy traditional landline service on fiber connections and keep the same price. So, you know, not clear. You know, it, apparently in some areas where Verizon hasn't replaced copper with fiber, the company's been accused of letting the copper networks fall into disrepair. That happened in New Jersey last year. There was a request for an investigation and claiming that Verizon has failed to install fiber in non-affluent communities and has essentially abandoned the copper networks through neglect. And that's the news.
All right. Did I just hear Flick's phone? Is he still playing Is he still playing Trumpy Birds?
It's huge.
No, my phone is on silent.
Okay.
So is mine.
Lee, you have to remember these things. I know you get out of practice.
The show's not on autopilot.
Don't make us get Cellebrite.
Even if to the listeners it may sound like that sometimes.
Your ringtone needs to be a bark, a dog barking, if anything.
No, actually, I have to play the ringtone that I just set up that I ended up switching away from because it was too distracting and too terrifying. When it would go off. Hold on, let's see. Sounds. Ringtone. Okay, this is the ringtone. Let's see if I can make this play into the microphone here. Wait, this one. I don't know if that's coming through or not.
It is.
A little bit.
The Star Trek dramatic things happening
theme.
Star
Trek fight song. The Starfleet Academy
the William Shatner without his shirt on.
My phone almost never rings because nobody ever really calls me because I don't give out my number. But occasionally,
1-800-JAY-LEE.
It'll ring, huh?
1-800-JAY-LEE. Now everybody knows it.
But when it does ring, this is what they get. Oh, can I do it? Yeah, let's. Nope.
That's
wow. That is so unique. Gene Wilder?
No, it's my best friend, Greg.
Oh.
Cynthia had sent him a gift one time, and he called us. That was the message he left on the answering machine, and I saved it.
Do you ever forget that that's not your ringtone, and suddenly there's someone else in the room with you?
Well, what happens is I'll be talking to someone, and then my phone will ring, and they'll just think that somebody's laughing at them.
So can we circle back? I know 2 weeks ago we talked about Cellebrite being the people that got, I guess it was, and my computer's rebooting right now, where they were not Syrian, Middle Eastern?
Israeli.
Israeli, thank you. An Israeli company that supposedly helped the FBI get into.
Yeah, that's what I've been telling everybody because I thought that was the truth.
No, that's not.
Now,
so
that was the first story on the news if you were listening
to
it.
Yeah, no, I heard it.
Oh, no, I didn't hear you say that, Pete. I didn't see the show.
I heard it. I hadn't heard it until I heard it on the news just now. So, you know, for example, last night I was telling people about it and I was like, oh, yeah, it's because Cellebrite did it.
Although it sure sounds like they used, that the exploit may have been the same. They just got it from the gray hat who knew about it.
Possibly. That's a tough call, but it is interesting how Cellebrite has already gotten, I guess, hooks into different law enforcement agencies here in the U.S. and already saying, like, hey, we have a service that will tell you, you know, if you pull someone over, if someone's in an accident, if they were on their phone or if their phone had been used in texting or a phone call. I think the state of New York is looking at that.
What are they calling it? Not the textilizer.
So I'm just kind of curious as to, you know, I know that, you know, in, as far as shadow ops go, that they can, you know, give money to whoever they want to. But, you know, can the FBI cut a PO to, I guess they can.
Sure. Well, I guess. I mean, I don't know. Maybe the FBI is a government entity, so there's probably procurement rules that apply. Can they cut a PO to a sole source supplier? There's probably an exception process.
Were there bids? What happened on that? But just kind of interesting. Yeah, they said, like, hey, it's this one thing, but actually now we find out it's something else.
I'd love to see, like, the boardroom, or it wouldn't be a boardroom, the conference room meeting over that. Like, we need to cut a check to these Cellebrite people so that we can do that. Well, are they a registered supplier? Are they in the procurement system? Well, no. All right, well, this is going to take 6 months, and we need to do a bid, too, to make sure that we're being competitive. So.
Then somebody in the corner says, but I play the terrorism card. Ding. And suddenly all their wallets open up and the money starts pouring onto the table. And
yeah, well, I guess that would terrorism defeats procurement rules.
It defeats all government sense.
As they say, terrorism wins.
Sad.
If we don't do whatever ill-advised scheme I've come up with, the terrorists win.
If you see something, say something. Don't let terrorism win.
They said we put Mulder and Scully on it, and they found nothing. So we've got to pay the Israelis.
Oh my gosh, that was the most disappointing series ending ever. Although maybe I shouldn't. Maybe if we're not talking about the X-Files, I shouldn't spoil the ending for the new one they just finished with.
Oh, the new season's wrapped up?
It was only 6 episodes.
It was 6 episodes.
Oh.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, the really cool ending, was on a terrorist cell phone, and they couldn't get any way to unlock the phone and get the really cool ending, so they had the one they used. So
the new
cliffhanger.
The new
Mr. Robot?
No. Oh.
Kick me again. Go ahead.
No, the new...
He's being trained well.
The new X-Files, the final episode, they wrapped it up at the arcade where F Society has their headquarters.
Okay. No, I didn't realize. Really? Oh,
the lone gunmen were there.
I really thought we were going to... Thought there was some trust again.
No. There's trust no one.
I'm talking about the X-Files. Yeah, I know you want to believe.
Trust but verify.
Yeah. The truth is out there.
But
I'm
so
not
going
to get it in here.
All right.
Well, just for reference tonight, basically from about 8:32 to 8:34, while you guys were talking about ringtones,
you were gone.
It was cutting out, but nobody could notice until I said
something.
We're
just going to have to start taking the baton and go from 8:31 to 8:34.
You need
and just to
pop open
no
a
tea.
Terminal window on that Mac and check, like, what do, like, look at the crontab file and see what's running at exactly 8:32. Like,
I don't. It's not a job. I don't think it's a job on that. It's not a job on that machine. I think it's something that's the whole, because this kind of drop has happened in the past when I was going to Flicted's machine. So I think something is bogarting all the bandwidth. Something's bogarting all the bandwidth in that.
It's coming
time.
From the station.
Inside the station with you.
The signal was inside the room.
So yeah, a friend of mine has a really good ringtone. It's from the Big Lebowski. Phone's ringing, dude.
That's very meta. Self-referential.
Yes. Very, very dude-like.
That's a lead name, Donnie.
All right, so let's go.
Market zero.
Market zero.
So there is a Big Lebowski-themed bar here in San Antonio. I have not been yet. One of the complaints I heard about it was that the wait staff did not get the references to the Big Lebowski.
That's kind of sad.
That's sort of a mistake.
You would expect them to be fans of the movie or at least be required to know some of the lines.
There's a Lebowski bar in Reykjavik, Iceland, and they serve over 12 or 13 different kinds of white Russians.
Oh, that sounds cool. Oh, my gosh. Do they have a marmot? Pet marmot?
I don't know if they have a pet marmot.
Having an aquatic life in a city limits is... what are you, a park ranger now? Sorry.
Are they open on Shabbos?
They don't pour on Shabbos.
And don't roll on it's Shabbos. It's only a block or so down from the Chuck Norris Grill.
At the Chuck Norris Grill, do they punch the burgers to
the
your
Chuck
table?
Norris Grill actually has Chuck Norris meme quotes, you know.
Does it have Chuck Norris?
Not the real one.
Do they call their beef Chuck Norris?
Like Chuck brown, Norris calls his Chuck? Beef Chuck Norris.
Oh, that's... I just took it in a direction I wasn't intending, Jay. Okay? I have no response ready for that.
Brown Chuck? Is it Nathan Chuck?
Hooray!
They like American culture
Careful.
In Iceland.
They apparently do like American meme culture in Iceland.
So DEF CON and Mr. Robot are getting together this Friday in New York. If
no.
we can find a way to go. No, seriously. Yeah. So they're doing, I guess, the Tribeca Film Festival.
They're doing
a couple different panels. There's two of them. So they're all of them are moderated by DEF CON, but there's one on Sunday where Moss, the Dark Tangent, is actually coming out and giving a talk on living in a post-Mr. Robot world. So that sounds pretty cool.
I wonder if anybody from the Mr. Robot show will show up at DEF CON.
We need
this
to start a letter-writing campaign and on Twitter. So here's the deal. I bet if Oh, I bet so. Because if he's actually going to go out there and meet with those guys, I bet if anyone can pull him back, Dark Tangent
well,
can pull him back to DEF CON.
What's the name of the main actor? The guy?
Sam Ismail.
So unfortunately, Sam Ismail, it doesn't really seem like he's the most computer savvy person. Like, he's done a couple
Rami
of
Malek.
Tweets.
Oh, thank you.
No, that's the sad thing. You don't want to know too much about the actors who play in these shows because, like, the Big Bang Theory, the Sheldon character, the actor who plays... can't remember his name.
Oh,
off the
Jim Parsons.
Jim Parsons is not a nerd. He doesn't get half the jokes he tells on the show.
Yeah.
So it's very disappointing to fans to meet people like that because you watch their character on the show, and they're not that person. They're an actor playing that person. So people want to run up to Jim Parsons and tell a Star Trek joke,
and he's like, dude.
Stop, dude. Just stop.
So yeah, Rami Malek is the name of the actor. I'm sorry.
Sam Ismail is the writer.
That's who I want to talk to.
But that being said,
the cast of
Big Bang Theory does show up to things like Comic-Con.
Oh, religiously, they make the tours, and I wonder if that's not part of their employment contract.
Maybe, but it wouldn't surprise me if like Mr. Robot. Sent a team to DEF CON to at least, you know, get the feel of what the hacker community is doing these days.
That would be
pretty
cool.
So
he would be inundated with people, though. I would follow him everywhere.
Rami Malek did a tweet, and the tweet was, it was like he was promoting, like, Mr. Robot is coming back in a few months or whatever, and the tweet was supposed to be, I think, like, a picture. So it was, like, text in the tweet, and then, like, a picture pasted in there. But, like, what the tweet ended up being, and I have to go dig it up, they may have deleted it, but I know somebody captured a screenshot, was like, the text he meant to say, so, you know, was like, Mr. Robot comes back, whatever, and then, like, below that, /users/, it was like the local path to the file he put in the tweet and tweeted it out, and it stayed up for, like, a long time, so, unfortunately, not necessarily... You know, and what do you expect? I mean, you know, an actor is an actor. An actor is not going to be a computer expert, and he's a good actor if he can convincingly play the computer expert. It doesn't mean he has to be in real life.
Yeah, just never forget.
Oh my
gosh. It went away.
I have not seen that.
It's Ankamarana, Night of the Museum 2. Night at the Museum 2.
Well, that's why I hadn't seen it then. he was in the Pacific. I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, he should only be in the hacker show.
Well, the Pacific, I just didn't think it was very great. It was too much. I mean, not to derail the show. I'm talking about.
Oh yeah, I wanted that to be better than it was.
It was too. I mean, maybe in being as over the top as it was, it did what it was supposed to do. It drew attention to, you know, what the situation was like in the Pacific War, but I mean, there were. I don't know. It's hard to complain about something like that when you know, Band of Brothers is so universally acclaimed, and I was hoping that Pacific would be just as good, but I was
really
following who the characters were. The storylines were all over the place.
The Pacific to be the Eastern Theater version of Band of Brothers.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It was just, here's how horrifying everything was for like 10 episodes. Here's how horrifying it is. Are you horrified yet? Well, wait till we get to next week when you're going to be really horrified with what we do. I mean, it was too much.
Band of Brothers came out after Saving Private Ryan, right?
Correct.
By a number of years.
In 2000.
So that was kind of like, you know, that was a sequel to that in a way.
2001.
Sort of, yeah.
2001, you got it.
I think the Pacific shows why the reason that the main history Americans know of the war is Pearl Harbor, Midway, Iwo Jima, nukes on Japan, and then you're kind of done. And they know that it was horrible. All the rest of it was horrible, you know, like the Philippines and I Shall Return, but they really kind of gloss that part.
Oh, yeah. Well, and you get in the, you know, you get, I forget how many episodes it is, 10 or 12 episodes, but I mean, every single one of them is just real hard to watch.
There's like 6 episodes just in Guam.
Yeah.
I didn't watch it.
Lao, where everything is, there's no water and they're, never mind. It's just, it's really heavy. So yeah.
I really wanted that conflict to be a lot more appealing.
Yeah.
The whole anti-STD episode was just way too far. It was terrible.
Why couldn't everything just be awesome? You know,
more tanks. Just didn't have enough tanks in that.
Why wasn't it like Pearl Harbor, the movie with Ben Affleck, where they?
Yeah, how come it wasn't like Pearl Harbor, the movie where we won?
Yeah.
I remember watching Tora Tora when I was young and thinking, you know, this is like watching the replay in a sporting event, and you think it's going to be different.
No,
it's going to change things.
No. Well, that's why at the end of Pearl Harbor, the movie, they capped it off with Alec Baldwin doing General Doolittle's raid, which, from what I gather, was militarily insignificant. But it certainly provided a way to cap off the movie with a "we won" kind of thing.
They should have just had, you know, the credits rolling with a slow motion nuclear explosion.
Too soon. Too soon.
Too soon.
Too soon.
Tell that to the survivors of the Doolittle raid.
Oh, too soon.
Oh.
That's disrespectful.
All right, let's go on to other things.
Face is disrespectful.
What?
Cool. Well, here, let me
stop harping, you harpy.
Let me get set up, and we can play some sounds and stuff. Yes, and have some cool
bite.
Oh, cool. That was feeding back through my headphones so I could hear it.
Yeah, you started talking right after the intro to the segment.
Good job.
With all the surprise of having something go right that would expect from
here. Wait, what?
Though the iPhone 7 and 7 Plus are not coming out until the fall of 2016, rumors and alleged parts leaks have already divulged many details about the prospective features. In March, a photo of a device said to be the iPhone 7 Plus surfaced on a Chinese website, and a rendering supposedly sourced from Apple manufacturer Catcher Technology featured the design of the iPhone 7. There's no way to confirm that those are right. Mac Autocara shared a report that corroborates many of the rumors and shares some new details on features we might see on the iPhone 7 and the 7 Plus. They say the possibility is great that both the image of the iPhone 7 Plus housing and the design source from Catcher are the real thing. The iPhone 7 Plus model featured a dual camera that we've talked about before, along with a smart connector that Mac Odakara suggests could be used to accommodate a smart keyboard for the iPhone. That's a big kind of new rumor thing. Much of the rest is speculation on the iPhone 7 and 7 Plus based on the supposition that the photos are actual depictions of the devices. Both the iPhone 7 Plus model and the rendering from Catcher show a design that's similar to the design of the iPhone 6S and the 6S Plus. And while previous rumors have said the device could be thinner, even approaching the thinness of the iPod Touch, Mac Odakara says the device photos suggest there will be little difference in size between the 7 and the 6S. They're also, you know, still expecting to eliminate the headphone jack. But Mac Otakaro now believes Apple will continue to use a single speaker in the device instead of stereo. They thought that one of the things with getting rid of the headphone jack would be stereo speakers. So the report also includes a mention of Bluetooth-enabled earpods that connect to the iPhone to charge, much like the Apple Pencil connects to the iPad to charge. So that's another one that's kind of new. The sad part is, of course, if all these are right, then we kind of know most of the really important stuff about the iPhone 7, and it's only April, so I don't know what rumors they'll come up with after that. Some things never go away, though, and no, it's not in more rumors. It's security issues. Remember the infamous January 1, 1970 bug that you could brick an iPhone in February? Well, despite Apple's patch, security researchers Patrick Kelly and Matt Harrigan have found a new way to they've discovered the way in which an iPhone constantly looks for trusted Wi-Fi networks, and that could lend itself to the malicious bricking of a Wi-Fi-enabled Apple device without the user even knowing it was happening. Isn't that nice? In a hypothetical example described by Krebs on Security, if a user confirms that a network called ATT Wi-Fi is a trusted connection, any subsequent network they come into contact with boasting the same name will connect with their iPhone. That way, when users revisit the same location frequently, you know, it hooks back up. But the feature could also be used to silently weaponize the 1970 bug, connecting users to similarly named networks they've never encountered and altering the date and timestamps on their iOS devices. In their research, they used this feature of iPhones and iPads to build a nefarious Wi-Fi network, harnessing the requirement of iOS devices to occasionally connect to a network time protocol server to keep date and time in sync. Once a user connected to the thought-to-be-trusted network, the iPhone would reconfigure its software to update the date and time information from, you know, since this is a malicious network, they set their own NTP date, which they specified as January 1, 1970. So that wasn't good. One thing, there's an interesting quote. They said, one thing we noticed was that when we set the date on the iPad to 1970, the iPad display clock started counting backwards. While we were plugging in the second test iPad 15 minutes later, the first iPad said it was December 15th, 1968. I looked at my partner and was like, did you mess with that thing? He hadn't. It finally stopped at 1965. And by that time, the iPad was about the temperature I like my steaks served at. So not does not work. It's not a good thing. It's not one to play with for funsies if you're not wanting to risk frying your iPod. So there are your iPhone. So there's a nasty little potential surprise if you keep your Wi-Fi names and connect, trust them and keep them very generic. Then you could leave yourself open to some real neat stuff. And then
or it's a really good use for a pineapple. No, because
and a pineapple.
I mean, because pineapple sniffs all the networks that the device is looking for, and it will claim to be that device that AP.
I thought you were talking about like an actual pineapple.
High five, okay. Wireless pineapple.
That's one of those things that at some point that the connecting up to networks that have the same name as trusted ones or attempting to connect. That's been known for a while, and I think they may have to figure out a way to.
Yeah, it's pretty bad because you tell a device to trust that, and that's cool, so you don't have to rejoin it, but there's no key exchange, right? It's just based on the name. Well, that's whatever, and it's not great, but it's not bad. But then you find out, the device goes around when Wi-Fi is turned on going like, hey, is anybody out there called home Wi-Fi? What about Hilton Wi-Fi? Okay, well, what about like my workplace Wi-Fi? Oh, you're my workplace Wi-Fi? Cool, I'm going to join you. Here's my password. Oh, you let me in. Awesome. That's pretty much how it works.
Yeah, it's real similar to if you're at the airport and you see one of the guys in a like limo driver uniform holding a sign with a name, and you go, I'm, and say the name that's on the card.
There's some cool stuff being done. Like I guess the government's had this for a while. If you look at the NSA Ant catalog, they've got two devices. One's called Sparrow 2. And the cool thing about Sparrow 2 is apparently it alludes to an embedded computer system the NSA has. It's called Blind Date, which I think is kind of neat. And they've also got something else called Nightstand, and pretty much the wire, the Pineapple does the exact same thing. It's just a small embedded computer with multiple wireless interfaces, and it can do man-in-the-middle stuff and lie to wireless cards.
Yeah, I'm wondering. Yeah, I wonder if at some point down the road, if more people aren't going to have essentially, if you're going to use your phone out in public and do Wi-Fi stuff, if you're not going to have a VPN that pretty much, yeah, it'll connect up to the Wi-Fi network, but then it'll use VPN for everything else, so that you know that you can trust what you're getting.
The protocols are starting to change. So a lot of the newer protocols, especially when you get into like WPA2 and stuff like that, they don't actually do the call outs for. So the hackers are going to have to start guessing, like, what are the common names that are out there? Or, you know, even better, you know, if you've got to have the exact same SSID, you just go close by where that network already exists, and then you kick people off that network, and then they join your network. So even though they built in some security, it doesn't really change that much. You still should turn off your Wi-Fi when you're not using it.
So now that I can't remember my Wi-Fi passwords because they're so long and they're written, you know, they're like stamped on the side of the router. Now I'll have to memorize. I will have to name Wi-Fi networks like their passwords.
Probably, yeah. I think that's where it's going to go. Is you're going to have something that's not, you know, don't have it Linksys, don't have it, you know, Xfinity Wi-Fi, don't have it any of the common ones, because yeah, you'll try to connect to those. So it is a step. It's nice that it's not beaconing out every single network you've ever connected to, but it's still not that much better.
You know, it makes me wonder when you see those networks that are just around in your neighborhood, if you've ever looked at the list and there's like NSA surveillance or FBI. Or those, maybe that really is the NSA, and they're just hoping people connect up without thinking about it.
Is it like how, like, if you ask a cop if he's a cop, he has to say yes? It's like the electronic version of that.
Does their router have to? I don't know.
Yes.
In the whenever Apple announces a new phone, there's got to be some kind of random call, random issue that gets press. Hmm. The iPhone SE has got its issue. Some iPhone SE users are complaining about Bluetooth audio issues. They say they're getting problems with Bluetooth phone calls when the smartphone is paired with a vehicle or wireless headset. The issue extends to GPS voice navigation for some, but streaming music over Bluetooth appears to be unaffected. Users claim to be experiencing distorted, staticky, or inaudible phone calls when using an iPhone SE over Bluetooth. Many of those affected noted that their previous iPhone model had, quote, crystal clear, unquote, audio quality. So it sounds like there may be an issue. It's not clear. You know, the problem is when you make how many million phones, some of them are going to have problems, and who knows if it's an issue for one particular model or not.
All right, that music tells us that it's time for us to take a short break and remind Lee of how to behave on the air.
What?
We're going to
take my pants off yet.
That's why you have to be reminded.
Happy place.
Happy place.
All right.
Right.
We're going to do some station business, and we'll take this short break. But we'll be right back for another hour of Technology Bites. Listening to that show now. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovers.
Yes.
KPFT is seeking local organizations, businesses, and individuals to take part in our Community Partner Program. Community partners help KPFT through supporting initiatives of the station, reducing our pledge drives, and being key contributors to our success. As a community partner, your organization or business becomes invested in a richer way in KPFT. You help keep important independent radio flowing. Interested in being a community partner? Contact Development Director Robin Lewis anytime. Just call 713-526-4000 or just send an email to robin@kpft.org. Thanks for your interest in our Community Partners Program. This is KPFT Houston.
Thousands of you have heeded the call, but there's always room for more. You can find KPFT on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. From our latest updates to funny videos, contests, news, and more, you can find us anytime, day or night. We're at KPFT Houston on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We'd love to give you the latest. Plus, you're already on Facebook. Why not get behind the scenes of Houston's leader for independent music, arts, ideas, and culture right now? Again, find us at KPFT Houston on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. See you there.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. We now return to Technology Bites.
Technology Bites. Yay, so welcome back. Second hour of the show.
Second hour.
Perfect
show so far.
Perfect show.
Yeah, and one way you can make it a perfect show is if during the show or during this next week, if you go to kpft.org and pledge, well, then we can hopefully cut our fund drive real short. You know, we would love it if everybody went and did their pledges all before the fund drive. So when it started, we could just say we already met our goal. And
that would be awesome.
Regular shows.
Yeah, so, you know, if you know you're going to donate anyway, just after a certain amount of time of begging, consider that time passed.
Or we'll virtually beg all during the week between shows, and you can just pick a time in that zone and put in your pledge.
Yeah, so, you know, that's coming up. I think our first fundraising episode is...
should be... You said it was...
I think it's in May, right?
Well, it starts on May the 8th.
Three weeks. If it starts on the 5th...
It starts on the 5th, our first one will be then...
The following Wednesday.
Which I'll be gone for, by the way. I'm not kidding, I'll be in Dallas, so...
Me too.
Yeah? Everybody will be in Dallas. We'll just go to Dallas. No, it's not the most exotic work destination in the world, but...
That's for sure.
But it is missing a fundraiser, so there's that.
There is that. Right. So thank you, job. I get paid to miss a fundraiser. That's nice. All right. So at any rate, we're going to move on with the other aspects of our program. So what's the next segment there?
Go Barrett time.
Oh, go wait. Barrett time.
Hey, Barrett.
Gone Barrett time?
Yes.
All right.
Wait, are we doing it?
In the geek world, we hear about new gadgets and gizmos every day. But can they stand a dip in the snark tank?
So I forgot to ask when Lee was talking about the Tesla Model S that he was driving. Was it the new 2017 model or was it the old one?
It was a new one. It only had like 1,000 miles on it.
Did it have the new grill and the bioweapons defense mode?
No, as far as I know, those don't actually exist yet.
They've announced Tesla.
Yeah, they've announced them, but the production lead time is about 2 months, and they don't have a press fleet of the new vehicles.
When he had the X, too.
Really? New Model S's are available starting today.
Yeah, you can order it today. There's a 2 month lead time for anyone that you, well, if you go buy one that's not a used one or one of the demo fleet, there's a 2 month lead time because they built to order. So if you press the button today, you'll get yours in 2 months, and it will be the new one. But we've got a little bit of time before they start showing up.
And I don't think the price changes though. The biggest changes on the Tesla, the 2017 model, is they changed the front end to one that looks more like the Model X with no grill and a sliver of black in the center. The thought is that maybe that it's more aerodynamic. Also on board, like I mentioned, is the bioweapon defense mode HEPA air filtration system from the X, which is basically where it literally keeps the air pressure slightly higher inside the car so that then the only air is going through the filter to come in, and then any kind of place, if there's a leak anywhere, then the pressure inside's higher so the air pushes out. So things outside can't leak in if the air is going out. It's kind of like a balloon. Let's see. It has full LED adaptive headlights, updated seats, and upgraded charger, which can take which is supposed to speed up if you're at the supercharger and stuff. It can do more at a time, and and of course, for a modern machine like this, it has two new wood decor options. That's the important part. So you can get your choice of two new types of wood to put inside your Tesla, just to be modern. Shouldn't there be new kinds of like carbon fiber or
there
nano?
There is a carbon fiber option, yeah.
Spoiler, right?
There's a carbon. They have a carbon fiber interior option thing too, I think. I mean, it's one of the reasons why they get gigged. I mean, to make this into the Tesla show, so poke me if I'm going on too much. But one of the reasons why they get gigged is because it's, you know, a six-figure car basically with an interior that is not in the same class as what you'd get if you bought, you know, a Lexus or another, or, you know, an Audi A8 or whatever. It's not a, you know, it's certainly nice, but it is not an interior that matches with the price you pay for the car, and they've gotten rightly gigged for that. So this is kind of one of the, I mean, they're trying to add more materials and make it nicer or whatever, and good for them.
You know, well, one thing they did just to jack with people doing rumors about the car is that they claimed there might be a spoiler, but then there wasn't one.
Well, there's like a lip spoiler.
Yeah, there's a carbon fiber spoiler. I'm actually, you can go order one right now.
Yeah.
I was doing more of a spoilers.
Spoiler.
I'm just waiting for the clever marketing campaign where they have a TV commercial and say, come on down and Tesla drive one today.
I like the
ludicrous. Can't Tesla drive one?
Cannot Tesla drive one. You can, but you can't. You can't just go. You have to make an appointment because of the dealership franchise laws. Tesla is not allowed to do test drives. So you have to make an appointment to have our
ride. So there's
ride
laws against
experience.
My joke?
Yes.
Jokes are different. It's no different than a Genius Bar.
And for their spokesperson, they need to hire Homer Simpson. I designed this car just for you.
So the new one will do 0 to 60 in 2.8 seconds.
Yes.
That's quick. That's with ludicrous mode, which is another five-figure tack on.
If you get the performance one with the dual motors and check the ludicrous mode thing, then yes.
Isn't P90 a supplement of something?
Probably.
Can you tell the car to, like, launch? You know, can you, like, command it, voice command?
2.0.
Go into launch mode. Launch mode voice.
There's no launch mode. You just push the pedal down.
Can you tell it to push its own pedal down? Can you say,
I mean, you can
Tesla, go fast?
No. You can set the adaptive cruise to like 90 and hit go, and it will gradually accelerate to 90 at a sane pace. But if you want the 2.8 second 0 to 60,
you can't do that hands free.
You must engage. Well, you could, but you can't do it feet free. You can hands up to the sunroof and stomp on it if you want.
There is a hack. There is a voice hack for it, but you have to tell Siri, and then Siri tells Alexa. And Alexa says, okay, Google, and then, okay, Google talks to the car, which by then you've wasted the 2.5
right.
seconds.
It's now been 5 minutes because one of those things is broken. It doesn't work right. No, yeah, it's fast. I heartily recommend everybody go and hop in one if you haven't been in a car that goes that fast, that quickly. It's like, you know, going to one of those magnetic launch roller coasters where it, like, just zaps you off to breakneck speed very quickly. Your head whacks into the headrest and everything. It's so fast off the line that the only reaction that most people have is just sort of to laugh
snapping.
Because it's like it's just like, oh my god, like it's just a lot to psychologically, it's a lot to deal with going that fast all of a sudden. It's really cool. There's all kinds of YouTube videos if you want to watch people like practically wetting their pants doing a Tesla launch. Just go to YouTube and look for Tesla launch videos. They're all over the place and they're great.
Well, so once you've got your Tesla, then when you get home, it's really lame when you have to like pull out your keys and have a like physical lock with a metal key and put it in there. Quickset is taking the next step. You know, there's now there's the locks that you can open automatically, a Bluetooth and that kind of thing. But Quickset is now trying to do away with the key entirely. They're showing off a prototype smart lock that only uses a touchpad. It'll have a Z-Wave connection too, so many smart home hubs will be able to connect to it and theoretically allow it to be unlocked from a phone. They've been thin on details like price, but apparently the removing the lock's keyway is meant to keep homeowners safe from common break-in methods like lock picking. Of course, it brings the obvious question up: if there's no manual way to unlock it, what happens if the power's out or the lock breaks for some reason?
Let me stop you right there just for a second, Pete. Barrett, what do you think your DefCon buddies would have to say about
that? Well, not so much DefCon. My ShmooCon buddies, who just gave a talk and released a tool set at ShmooCon, I think, mid-January. So that's called Z-Wave. And Z-Wave is – it's kind of like friendly with Zigbee. And Zigbee is very easy to break into. So people are going like, hey, let's do Z-Wave. And Z-Wave is not only in home automation stuff, but it's also in, like, industrial control and stuff like that. So they released a tool set called EasyWave. And it's got three different parts to it. There's an Easy Stumbler part, which goes out and just like, you know, if you remember the Net Stumbler, it looks, you know, how it would look for Wi-Fi networks. This looks for, you know, Z-Wave networks, more or less. And then there's Easy Recon, which more or less it's a device interrogation piece, and it says like, hey, who's the manufacturer, what software versions, what command classes do you have, what's the current state, what are your settings. And then there's also an Easy Fingerprint module. So
they didn't make an Easy Bake.
Not Easy Bake yet. Ooh. I think I'm going to have to go contribute some code tonight. That's the next module.
Can you run these off of like a laptop, or do you need like a special antenna to get the right
frequencies? Oh, no. So what you need to do on this is the people that were running it, they were running it with a hack RF. So you need a software-defined radio. And they were actually these attacks, which were getting it done on, you know, quick-like, they were using two software-defined radios. And actually what they did during the talk was they were taking over industrial control lights, and they found a paper that was discussing, like, hey, if you want to find, you know, like, mean time between failure on industrial fluorescent tubes, here are the tables at which you need to turn them on and off. So a lot of them were like, you know, turn on for 2 seconds, turn off for eight, and it would get on these lights the perfect kind of thermal up and down to make them fail and explode within a little bit of time. And that's what they did. They wrote a program that would go in and, you know, within an hour or two, between 2 and 5 hours, depending on how new old the lights were, they would pop all the lights in a, you know, controlled circumstance.
All right. So about that,
should be on Mr. Robot.
And that when you install your wireless lock in your house.
And that's the thing. I really like the idea of wireless locks. I really like the idea of being able to pop my garage door open, and, you know, from like my phone and stuff like that, or just on proximity. But knowing what I know about the RF spectrum and knowing what I know about how a lot of these home products aren't really secured, I'm not doing it yet.
Yeah. Well, the thing to me, you know, there is that, and I see there's a legitimate point to it. But on the other hand, there's every house around has this, there's this material that they use on the outside that you could pick up anything off the ground and put it through and go inside through
it. Is that the GLAS material, like the, that new brand new stuff?
I think it's all the houses that run on Windows have this zero-day installation.
And that's really the true thing. You can worry about stuff like that, but honestly, you know, doors still kick in. You know, you can still break a door jam. You can jimmy a window. There are lots of ways to get in. So, you know, that is a little bit paranoid. If someone wants into your house, chances are they can get into your house. It's just best to make it look lived in and it, you know, things like that, probably.
It does raise. I mean, it raises the legitimate point is that, you know, these kinds of things do need to be secured, and we've been pushing on that on Internet of Things. This idea where it just will talk to any network and, you know, have all the same commands across them and not really verify who's telling them what to do is a real problem. And somebody needs to solve that so that this can be a secure thing and that you can't do kind of cruel things like, you know, burn out people's lights within that. On the power thing, if you bought this lock, you know, once it goes up for sale, you may have to do the thing where now you'll have your smoke detectors and your lock that you'll have to make sure that you keep a battery backup so that it will work when there's not power.
Yeah, that's just, there are a lot of things that could just go wrong with that. I don't know.
Welcome to the future.
You can also, you know, with metal keys, you can lose them, or someone could take a copy of them, or, I mean, it's...
You can, but the nice thing about metal keys are, I mean, it's a physical access kind of thing. You have the key or you don't have the key. You know, there's one key unless someone impressions it, you know, or stuff like that. Whereas, you know, a wireless key, you play that once and it just goes out everywhere. It's like, you're like, hey, everybody, here's my key. And I assume that they do some things like they rotate passwords and they rotate codes and there's some challenge answer kind of stuff. But, you know, it's still being broadcast, so it's
through the air.
It's a whole new world. The technology just needs to catch up to where that's as secure as, you know, like when wireless first came out, WEP was, what was it, wired equivalent
privacy. That's a lie.
So yeah, that's a lie. But the idea was that, hey, we want to make this wireless stuff as secure as if we were going through, you know, like an Ethernet cable, to where not just anyone can, you know, eavesdrop on it. And that's where I want to get, maybe with the wireless stuff, like maybe there needs to be more directed wireless stuff to where it's not just broadcasting all over the place, or maybe it's more NFC. But I don't think Z-Wave is going to do it just because it goes everywhere.
Yep, I would agree.
NFC so, might be the way to go. We'll see.
So in other products, just in case, you know, so you bought your Tesla, you've spent all the high-end money, and you need a way to have a really, really crazy expensive e-reader, Amazon has a new Kindle for you. The thing is, what they found is that obviously people who are into reading and who want to read ebooks or very into reading ebooks want, there are plenty of them who want high quality stuff. So they had that 300 DPI, you know, the Kindle Voyage. But now the new one is called the Kindle Oasis, which Jeff Bezos teased last week and then leaked more or less in its entirety. This one is a $290 Kindle. It starts shipping on April 27th, and it does to the Voyage what the Voyage did to the Paperwhite. there are some nice twists, apparently, that were fairly unexpected. It's very thin. They made the device really thin via a unique design gambit. They shoved most of the electronics into a thicker 8.5 millimeter pod on the left-hand side of the device, or, you know, if you flip it over, it'd be on the right side. And that let it shave the rest of the case down to 3.4 millimeters or less than half the thickness of the Voyager. So it's kind of like the MacBook Air in a sense, where it's thicker towards one side and it doesn't get thin on a steady basis. It's thicker at the one side, and then it gets thin and stays thin through the rest. They also greatly reduced the bezel, except on the edge with the rear hump, which is where, you know, the idea is that that's where you hold it. And so there's room on that side of the bezel for page turning buttons. Apparently it's much more pocketable than before. It's so diminutive, you might be tempted to call it the Kindle Mini if it weren't for the fact that the display size remains 6 inches, which is the same as basically every other Kindle except the giant one that was ever made. The monochrome e-ink display isn't a radical upgrade from the 300 DPI one that you could get in the Voyage, but Amazon did move the LED lighting from the bottom of the screen to the side so you can get more brightness. And it has the kind of massive battery life that you'd expect. It was up to 6 weeks in the case of the Voyage, assuming you read about a half an hour a day. The Oasis has a small battery, but it still says it'll do 2 weeks of power, again, based on an average of 30 minutes a day. And it comes, you know, for your 250 or your 290, sorry, you also get a leather case that has a beefier battery that's built in. And so the case snaps on magnetically, and then the battery connects up. So, you know, when it's in the case, it automatically draws power from the battery. If you plug it into power, the e-reader and the case charge as if they were one. So it doesn't do, you know, you don't have to worry that one gets charged before the other. So if you've got a bunch of money and you want a like really ultimate e-reader, all the current ones are still on the market. The Kindle Voyage is a couple $100, the $120 Paperwhite, and then the $80 kind of gray plain old Kindle is still around. So
it bumps up the price another $60 or $70 to get the 3G model too, doesn't it? So I mean the it goes from under $300 to like, you know, $350 plus pretty quickly.
Yeah, they didn't say anything about the 3Gs. I'm guessing they're just going by the base models when they're talking through this article.
Yeah, it's out there. You can pre-order it. So I think the base one without 3G ships on April 27th. And if you wait a little bit longer, if you wait till May 4th, you can get the one with the free 3G on there. And so I always bought the small ones, and I've always gotten them, but at this price point, I'm not. <'Cause>, know, I like the small ones.
They're all the same size.
Yeah.
This one is smaller because of being it's smaller in the way that more expensive devices are, where it's thinner and all that, but the screen is the same size.
Yeah, it's not worth the upgrade. I don't think.
Frankly, you know, if you're on a normal budget, if I was recommending one, I have a Paperwhite, and the current Paperwhites have basically the same screen as the Voyage. They have the 300 DPI white screen, and that one I think is pretty much, you know, if it's just about the screen and about not paying too much for your reader, I think that would be the one. If I was recommending one, that would be the one I'd say people would be for not that much more money. You get that one is dramatically better than the just base Kindle. And then now we got a couple movie things. So, you know, it's a big it's become a big sort of sci-fi comic movie world for various geeks, but this one is, this one's kind of the granddaddy of them all. If you've ever, if you've never had the chance to go sit in a theater and watch the original Star Wars movies, you know, 4, 5, and 6 by the title numberings, the very clever, knowing what people want to see in movie theaters, Alamo Drafthouse has arranged screenings of Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi in special locations in over 20 cities for this August.
But Pete, so, which versions?
These are the tweaked re-releases from 1997. Sorry, no despecialized versions here. But they'll give you a pretty, you know, they'll give you as close a taste of the Star Wars experience, especially for those of you who weren't, you know, who were, oh, maybe not born for several years after the movies were in theaters. It can be a cool experience. You can just pretend you don't remember the movie and see it as if it was, the first time.
Alamo's kind of cool too. I think if you want to get in on that, though, the tickets are going to sell out pretty quickly, and I believe they start taking pre-orders on, of course, May 4th.
May the 4th, yes. So, and it is a marathon. So, each screening will show all three movies back to back. I know that San Antonio and Houston are on the list. If you go to geekradio.com, there's links to all the articles that we've talked about and used stuff from on this show. So you can find the one about Star Wars. And I would think that you're going to get a pretty good, they're not showing, this isn't like where they're going to have it going for a week. This is, you know, I guess
it's a one-time thing, I think.
It's either a one-time thing or they're just doing it for a very short time. So that's why you probably want to order your tickets early. And I'm pretty sure you're going to find that you will get a fairly fanatical group. It's not going to be the casual, oh, well, should we see, you know, Floppy's Big Adventure or, oh, here's the original Star Wars trilogy type crowd is not going to be there.
With all three being a marathon, yeah, I would expect it to be pretty much your hardcore, diehard Star Wars people with a little bit of crossover of Dune, because to go 9 hours, you're going to need a still suit. Blah, blah, blah. I would assume.
And then this one I didn't link the article, but because it's more video, and so you pretty much need to go find it yourself. Anyway, Doctor Strange first trailer has been released. Sort of finally for Try Buy or Fry on superhero movies, we're starting to get the reviews on Captain America Civil War, the next Marvel movie, the next kind of Avengers-esque thing. And I found a spoiler-free review from CNET so that it could be looked at without, without them revealing things that you couldn't have already seen in the trailer. And the reviews are pretty good. I must say they're markedly better than Batman v Superman, even though the Batman v Superman did do plenty good at the box office. So, I think, you know, because the Age of Ultron was kind of, to me, Age of Ultron was kind of, it wasn't as cool as the first Avengers movie. So hopefully this one's going to be more exciting. It's all, and if you've ever wanted to see all your favorite superheroes fight each other, all your favorite Marvel superheroes fight each other, that's what you're going to get for the next, I don't know, 5 or 6 different movies, if I've heard correctly. So Captain America and Iron Man are on opposite sides of, the title is Civil War, so there's not a real spoiler to that one. So should be interesting. There are some new players that are showing up. Black Panther will be in this one, and a teenage Spider-Man is going to show up. That's some of that is to promo the Black Panther and Spider-Man movies that are coming out after that. They don't have the dates on them, so it's interesting because so now you've got the Marvel, you know, the Avengers universe, and we're going to start seeing, you know, you've got the Avengers universe, and then you've got the Star Wars universe, and it's going to be interesting to see how they all put out multiple different movies kind of in the same general
universe that kind of work with each other and also mean that you kind of regularly get entertainment from them. So seems like they're sort of turning into where it's almost like a short TV season, you know, where they make sure that every year they've got new product at certain times in the year that they put out to watch that you'd go to the theater for. So it's sort of changed. I think it's changing how people go to movies. So I don't know what's the consensus amongst the assembled committee.
my continued thing on superheroes movies, if the movie is not based on any comic book I actually ever read, I'm more likely to like it.
Spider-Man. And have you read the Civil War ones? or you mean the character at all?
The characters at all. So like Iron Man, Spider-Man, Batman, Superman, any of that. If I watch a movie, it sucks because the way that I built that character and that lore up in my brain, reading the comic books, the movie is like this, screw your perception of this. This is how it should be. It should be consumed, and I don't
so
like
you can only watch Ant-Man now, or do you keep thinking of Garrett Morris when you see Ant-Man?
No, Ant-Man was good because I wasn't familiar with the Ant-Man character at all, so I enjoyed that. I enjoyed Guardians of the Galaxy. That was good. I didn't
I
know
Guardians
those.
Way more than I thought I was going to.
Yeah, I wasn't prepared for that.
It was good stuff, and I enjoyed it because I had no preconception of like what are these characters going to be like when they're brought to life. And I enjoyed that.
Although I don't watch any other superhero movies, mainly because how we were talking about before with the television actors, how they're like not at all geeky in real life. A lot of the actors that play the superheroes, they don't have superpowers.
They have no powers.
So really? Yeah, I feel that's really disingenuous.
Like who most are we talking
them,
about?
Most of them, yeah. Yeah, I almost made a really horrible joke there. The original Superman, for instance, can't fly.
Oh.
Yeah, that I didn't mean to go there, but
fortunately he's dead.
Christopher Reeves was not nearly
walk.
As invincible
no,
as we thought he
no.
was.
Even the original Superman,
the very original
George,
Superman,
George.
Oh, second original Superman, first movie.
It was George Reeves,
cinematic,
also not Reeves. Such of a good Superman in real life.
And of course, you know, even yeah, then, even with the comic books, and then I still had the whole '60s Batman TV series.
Yeah,
to
and then
watch.
Batman and Superman getting in fights now. I mean, I think it's just gotten out of control.
Well, there's a valid. There is a valid like point of view about how art should stand on its own, and the movie version of a story versus the comic book version of a story versus the TV version of the story, like none of these should necessarily be beholden to each other. You know, a movie adaptation of a book doesn't necessarily have to be.
We want continuity. We need a
well,
thread to pull
it's
everything
like,
together.
Do you serve the art, or does the art serve you?
Yes.
I mean, are you looking to experience...
To serve art. It's a cookbook!
Are you looking to experience something and allow someone else's vision of art to change you, or are you looking for art to reinforce your own vision? And, I mean, that's it kind of comes... Not to get too philosophical, but it kind of comes down to the ultimate purpose. Like, what is art for? Is art to change you, or is art to conform to your expectations? So,
yes.
I don't know. I'm kind of the opinion that the more different an adaptation is from its source material, the better it is, because the more it stands on its own and doesn't necessarily reflect the visions that I have. Because I don't need to
see, I don't necessarily see the Marvel superhero movies as being an adaptation or of that. I see it as a gross commercialization of it, trying to basically lump that
or like
together.
the adaptation of Flash that. The movie was called Forrest Gump. Totally unexpected.
I thought you were talking about
he
Flash.
Ran so slow.
Flash Gordon.
Movie to get
well, but
across.
He's another country. Character that is Flash Gordon, not the Flash.
Right.
Well, an interesting test of Lee's theory would be another
theory
movie
would hold
that's
more
in
weight if he was wearing pants.
would be Dolph Lundgren as the Punisher.
Yeah,
how'd
well, there is the thing where the adaptation is totally different from the book because the people who made the adaptation don't get the source material at all or understand it. But no, on another, a different front, one that should be interesting from the perspective of it's in a universe that people know, but it's a new thing, is the Harry Potter, not the stage play,
Magical
but the movie that's coming.
Two of them, I heard, yeah.
Whatever it is.
Yeah, something creatures and where to find them, or And there's a trailer out for that one now, too. And so it's got the tone of...
Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
And so it's got the tone, and it's in the universe of the Harry Potter stuff. But obviously, there's only a few characters that have any overlap, well, partly because it's set in the 20s. Yeah, the 20s and 30s.
I saw the trailer for Miss Peregrine's Home
for Peculiar Children. Yeah,
that looks pretty cool.
All right, so the comic book movie that I'm really looking forward to, and I'm expecting my phone to blow up with text from my wife here in just a second because she is too, is Suicide Squad. I think Suicide Squad looks fantastic.
So far the trailers look nice. You can't tell much about the plot except the general idea.
But
that's the thing is, but visually, I think it's going to look good. I think visually they've done a good, even if the story isn't good, visually.
They can get both, though.
What was that movie with the like, three women that were sort of like anime? It was like in the girl's mind.
Yeah, I never actually wound up seeing that.
I only watched part of it. But like
Sucker Punch, maybe?
Sucker Punch. See, I don't think that movie was all that great, but like visually it was pretty nice.
Yeah, it was a terrible movie, but it looked amazing.
Yeah.
I wanted to see it until I read some reviews.
It was a terrible movie.
Right.
It looked fantastic.
It's one of those that they shouldn't have released it as a movie. They should have just put out every piece of it separately as trailers, and people would have gone, man, this movie is going to be, I just can't wait. And you know, it's like, geez, we've got 2 hours of trailers out here.
Just cut the movie out of this. Suicide Squad, for those not familiar, is another comic book movie. It's focusing on the villains, and it's got all of the villains from multiple DC times. It's got the Harley Quinn obviously is in it. Joker's in it.
But don't think the Harley Quinn from like the cartoon series, you know, that's wearing the Harley Quinn outfit.
Right. Yeah. It's gonna be interesting.
It's the Halloween Harley Quinn, so it's slutty Harley Quinn.
Hot Harley
it's sort
Quinn.
Of it's kind of like the Expendables.
Flicked
with
it
a
was
tick
a Harley Quinn.
A lot more makeup.
Oh.
that's my quick description of the Suicide Squad. Is,
yeah, it looks good. I saw
a thing that said like, you know, the director whoever said that Jared Leto's Joker was amazing.
Creepy.
And I can't tell for sure from the trailers if I like it. I mean, he looks creepy, but I can't decide if I like him as the Joker or not.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like, you know, I don't know. I think
it's one of those that probably is going to either be...
Sorry, there's weird awesome. Background noise showing up
yeah,
all of a sudden.
Yeah, through Pete's
I think Pete,
line.
Yeah.
Sorry.
There's like, he has gone remote and is at an airport.
It's like we've opened...
Yes, I'm on that plane. I'm in the airplane from Sucker Punch.
I thought I heard a cat back there, too, screaming. Maybe that was just kids.
Yeah, anyway, I kept the dogs out, so of course then everything else is going to make noise in the room.
There's an AC vent right above you.
I think Suicide Squad is either going to be really amazing and kind of groundbreaking, or else it is going to be a Class A train wreck.
Yeah, well...
It's going to be... I don't think there's a middle to that. I think it's either going to be really, really great, or it's going to be...
I think visually, no matter, like Sucker Punch, I think visually it's going to be amazing. So even if it's not a good movie, there's going to be some amazing, like, short sequences people can pull from it that are really good.
You know, I think the first movie that really stuck me like that, where, like, the trailers blew my mind, the movie was awful. It's an older film now. It came out, I think, in the late 90s, early 2000s. I'd have to look up the exact date, but Sky Captain and the World.
Oh, I thought
tomorrow.
You were going to say Dark City.
No, Dark City was amazing.
I didn't like Dark
Visually,
City.
That was pretty fun.
Sky
yeah.
Captain looked like it was going to be like the coolest movie ever, and then like and it had and the look was amazing. It just nailed that, you know, that awesome like serial looking look.
30s yeah. robotic sort of steampunk 30s,
Art
I
Deco
guess.
Future.
Deco 30s.
It looked great, but the movie was just.
What was the other Art
horrible.
Deco superhero movie?
The Shadow?
No, not Shadow.
Oh, are you talking about the William Beatty one? Not the
Dick Tracy?
The Robot Man.
Oh, Westworld?
Huh? No, not Westworld. New World.
Yul Brynner? Was it Yul Brynner?
No, it wasn't
the
animated.
Earth Stood Still.
It wasn't Shadow.
Metropolis.
Was it?
Oh, I'm Iron Giant?
No. That was anime, wasn't it?
No,
that was
Metropolis
anime.
Was a 30
I'm
German
joking
cinema,
about Metropolis. That was a joke.
Also anime, yes. They did do an anime version, which I actually hear is very good, but I haven't watched it.
So what's a robot? Was it Rock'em Sock'em Robots, that movie that was based on that?
No.
Logan's Run?
Can we promise not
give
to
us
mention
more
Angry
hints.
Birds movie? Ever?
What?
Angry Birds movie.
Give us more hints.
It's happening.
Have you seen the trailers for the new Doom game?
D-O-O-M?
Yes.
The game?
It looks
yes.
like
no.
exploding dead things.
Yes.
Looks all right.
Looks all right.
Looks all right.
It's got a
you
good gotta
wonder. I mean, the Doom was groundbreaking for its time and all that kind of stuff, but how do you take it? You know, it was head and shoulders above everything else. I mean, it was really, you were fighting demons in it, and it was pretty, you know, even with the limited graphics. Oh. I don't know if that's one of those where more accuracy and better graphics than that.
Scarier demons.
Is that gonna work, or is it gonna
no,
just
it's,
be?
No, now it's gonna be Doom,
gonna
beat Doomcraft.
On you. I yeah. remember huh. my buddy Matt had gotten a when this would be in 92 or 3, I guess 93. He had gotten a brand new computer. It was a first generation Pentium 60. And we were in high school.
13 frames per second.
Well, we went over to Matt's house. Matt had Doom. And me and Matt and another buddy, Steve, we spent the night at Matt's house and stayed up all night on this on this Jolt Cola and Doom-fueled marathon playing through on his super hot, brand-new Pentium that could run Doom in, like, high-resolution 320 by 200, not the low-resolution mode. And you could make it be full screen, and it was amazing.
16-bit sound.
Yeah. Good times.
So people are still playing really old games. I think just last week someone finally caught on to I don't want to call it an Easter egg, but it's like definitely a tell in Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Oh,
on
yeah.
Have you guys seen this on the Super yeah. Nintendo? So one of the boxers, I forget his name. I think his first name is Honda. It's one of the ones where he just comes and he does all these punches, and you've got one shot to knock him out, and it's a special move. And someone finally, after, 18, 20, 30 years, who knows, there's a guy in the back corner below, like, one of the two ropes in the boxing ring that blinks. And when he blinks, if you launch your attack right then, you'll always get it. So the makers told you exactly wow. when to do it. But no one noticed for, like, forever. And I think what happened was when you would get to those bosses, I remember, like, I was watching this video of it doing it. I was like, I don't really remember Mario being there, you know, being the ref, because you're so just focused. I mean, he was there, but
yeah,
you're
Mario
so focused on, well, I know that. I guess my point is that
you never noticed
I never
it.
Looked at him because
you were
when you would
on
get
the fight.
To the big boss, you were so there's so much adrenaline. You're just looking at
oh,
him.
Yeah.
You don't look at anything else. So the fact that I didn't really pay all that much attention to Mario, I can very easily see how no one ever.
Did you ever run away from the game?
What do you mean run away? Like turn around and run out of the house?
Yeah, yeah. No. Well, because it sounds like you're describing, you know, fight
like,
or flight,
you
where you're like
mode,
where your vision
like,
narrows to where you're like
jumps out of the ring.
No, there was, you know, a lot of shouting and possibly a controller got thrown once or twice, but that was probably about it. The nice thing about non-wireless controllers, well, you could throw a controller and it's not going to go very far.
You couldn't break those old Nintendo controllers.
No, that's what I'm saying.
No matter how angry you got at them. Always...
And this is, you know, being thrown over 80s carpet, 90s carpet, so nothing was going to get broken. But you know.
Well, on other video game news, I tried out for PlayStation 4. I think Xbox had it a little bit earlier. PlayStation 4 rolled out their remote play application where you can play it on a PC or Mac, where you basically load up an app on your machine. And then you log into their, you know, you log into your network, your account. They have they're sort of their equivalent of the iCloud account, which, you know, I know I know Xbox has their particular thing, and Sony has theirs, like Sony Play or something like that. And you log in, and then you have to plug in your controller with the USB, you know, the charge cable. You have to plug it directly into the computer, so you're wired up. But I used it because basically I couldn't get at my TV to play a game when I wanted to, so I decided to try it out, and it actually worked pretty well. I was pleasantly surprised at how well it worked. The screen quality, it's doing a very small screen. I think it's doing like a 720p type screen, and then you can enlarge it, and obviously your computer will fill it in, so it's not as crisp as you know, playing the console game on your, you know, high def TV. But I didn't notice any issues of responsiveness or any video, you know, slowing or anything like that with it to play. So I was, you know, it's free, so it was nice to get access to it from you know, a pretty good screen on my computer.
So who was it that just recently came out with finally there's a competitor for people who don't have pay for cable television. Like Sling had been doing it for a while, but I forgot who it is now.
Oh, the streaming box that'll do broadcast stuff, where you could hook up an antenna to it and stream broadcast television.
Like Sling, you could buy packages of cable TV, and there's, I forgot who it is now. There's a new one that came out. It's got a different set of channels. Or some different set of channels.
Dish Network did one for Sling. That's called Sling. That's Sling TV, actually.
Right, right. There's that one, but it was the only game in town for a while. And finally, I forgot who it is, though. They just came out with a competitor product. But the thing is, you have to set it up through... Maybe it's Sony that's doing it. You have to set it up through, I think, a PlayStation or Amazon.
Sony View?
Yeah, I think that's what it was. You have to do it through that or Amazon Fire Stick or whatever. But if you do it, you can get even like some local channels, and you can get on the View one, you can get like the whole Fox channels, like in like Fox Sports and stuff.
So that may be, you know, basically today they announced the Sling TV announced a new multi-stream version with Fox channels. $20 a month, won't have the Disney channels that are available in single stream in their single stream package, but it's got let's see, it launched Wednesday and beta will allow for 3 simultaneous streams on different devices for families. It's going to have Fox channels like FX, Fox's regional sports networks, and the Fox broadcast network. Let's see, on demand stuff of shows like Empire and the full library of The Simpsons. That might be worth $20 a month. Let's see, what were some of the other channels are talking about? There's some, that's one that does multiple stream, you know, multiple deals. There are some single stream ones that are like AMC, A&E, Time Warner, you know, the HBO and the Turner channels, Epics and Univision. The main catch to their new option, the multi broadcast one, is no Disney. So if you're trying to have your kids ride in the car and each get to watch different things, that's not going to happen.
I think the another difference was that Sling is pretty good about being able to watch it outside of your home, but this other one is kind of tethered to your house. Like, you can't really do away from your house as easily.
It's going to be interesting. This is happening slower than I thought it would, but it seems like there's more, you know, especially the satellite networks like Dish and DirecTV are starting to kind of, they're starting to do more mobile solutions where they aren't as picky about the whole tied to your cable system or that kind of stuff. And so they may be the ones that break this open where you can get more channels that you really want to see.
And I guess Apple's been trying to do it, but they've had a hard go of it, like trying to do that with Apple TV to get you know, package where people can pick the channels and all that stuff, and nobody wants to do it. They all want to bundle it and have control of it.
So that's why I wonder why Apple didn't just buy Time Warner. They've got the money. It's like, just take some of their cash and buy Time Warner, and then they'd own the channels, a bunch of the channels, to start their thing.
That's true.
On their own. And I'm just, I must say, I kind of don't know or get where Apple's kind of going right now. I'm not seeing a strong direction that where you can kind of even guess. Oh, you know, before it was sort of, oh yeah, you know, they'll do better, cooler laptops or, you know, thinner iPhones. But, now it's just kind of, I don't know what they're planning to do or even when they're planning to do it. They don't seem to be upgrading on any kind of, they seem kind of lost. I keep waiting for upgrades on their laptops and that kind of stuff, and they're not coming. The phones and the iPads, I guess they kind of have had a regular upgrade path, but on a bunch of the other stuff, it's just, you know, it's stayed the same. They haven't really refreshed them, and I don't know why.
Maybe you should call Johnny Ive and ask him. Call him right up.
He's designing them. They're being handcrafted. They're now all in rose gold. They're trying to figure out how to make rose gold keys for the new MacBook. Extremely expensive.
To go back to television stuff, somewhat unrelated, but all of the Animaniacs episodes are on Netflix now.
Yes.
That's pretty nice. I started watching those again.
Yeah, I saw that and I made my high school junior age daughter watch one, and I had to kind of push her to sit down and to watch it at the start, but then it only took a, by the time they were done with the credits, she pretty much was hooked. Which is that they have that awesome effect. Yes, they are.
They have baloney in their slacks, man.
I didn't realize that they did the sketch with the whole, with a song with all the names of the countries in the world was in the very first episode.
Yeah, I hadn't realized that either. I remembered that happening, later. But yeah, me too.
So, but yeah, I'm trying to think. That's one of those where, you know, until they put it out, you didn't realize, like, hey, we're missing that. You know, there's a lot of shows that had a good number of episodes that were worth watching, and they are in the vaults, and they haven't pulled them out and got them on Netflix or Hulu or any of the streaming type services. And I guess Netflix probably has people whose job is to go figure out what those are and get the rights.
Well, I also read an article, I think it was today, maybe yesterday, that said that all of the three people who did the voices for the original brothers and sister Warner are planning on doing a singing tour and redoing songs from the Animaniacs series with an orchestra backing them.
Well, Dot is, I think, Tress MacNeille, who does a lot of the women's voices on The Simpsons.
I think I remember that name I can't remember now.
She's one of those who was on kind of every on every cartoon, and she still is. She's one who just does kind of all voices just about everywhere. And what is it, Rob? The funny thing is Rob Paulson? Yeah. Rob Paulson, Jess Harnell, and Tress MacNeille. And
His name is Robert Paulson.
Robert Paulson.
Have you heard
it's either Rob Paulson or Jess Harnell. When you see him, he looks like a rock star. You know, he's got like long hair and a beard, and he wears leather all the time and all that. And so totally different than, of course, the voice of the you know, the voice that he does on the voices that he does in cartoons. But
if you want to hear something funny, we can't play it on the air, but if you Google search Pinky and the Brain voice actors swearing at each other.
It's been a while, but that is good.
See, that the Animaniacs had basically Animaniacs had the best voice actors that there are, essentially. Pinky and the Brain was Rob Paulson was doing Pinky, and the Brain is Maurice LaMarche, who is the voice of Lexus and all kinds of other stuff. He's another one that's kind of in everything, like Tress MacNeille. I'm kind of an aficionado of voice actors on cartoons. And apparently. He's one. Well, he can do Maurice LaMarche is the one who he did Orson Welles, and they did something where they brought him to actually dub Orson Welles' voice in some movie where obviously Welles is dead, so they couldn't get him to say whatever it was they wanted, and they brought in Maurice LaMarche, and he did it.
That's kind of awesome.
Yeah, yeah, he does a wide variety of voices, and you know, there used to be if you look it up on YouTube, there's a like promotional video for some like award ceremony, and it's got the guys who do movie trailers. It's older because the main guy, the In a World guy.
Oh, that's Don LaFontaine.
In a World. Don LaFontaine
who has tragically passed away.
Yeah, yeah. It's him and
I know what you're talking about. It's like they all get in like a limo and they ride to an award ceremony, right?
Yeah, and they're talking to each other and they kind of talk about themselves in the voiceover voice that they use for what they do. So of course you get the guy who's straight from the Disney vaults, you know, and you don't realize how much you knew these people's voices so clearly.
Now, more than ever.
So.
Hi, this is Dr. Krieger, and you're listening to Technology Bites Radio.
Nice!
Perfect and appropriate.
We need to use that. Yeah. We've been sitting on that for
that
long.
Why isn't that in the intro? Why isn't that the only intro we play on repeat forever from now on?
Loop that for 2 hours. We'll be back after fundraiser.
Yeah.
Broker than ever. We'll actually end up owing the audience money.
We just have to capture the rest of the
Archer cast.
We just have to capture the rest of the Archer cast. Of course,
them?
The toughest one is to get on tape. Of course, the tough one would be getting.
H. John Benjamin fled the scene when I was at the presser for Archer. I got him in the photo shoot, but there's the mingle afterwards, and he was gone. So,
yeah, his voice is in demand.
Maybe you can get him for the Bob's Burgers one instead. Archer, he has to be cooler. Bob's Burgers, he just can sit around in an undershirt.
Maybe home movies will come back.
Technology Bites
Burger.
That'd
be awesome.
And the Tech Bites Burger.
It has tech. And you bite it.
Ooh. Tech Bites Bites.
Do we have another segment to throw out, or do we completely get derailed here?
No. No, we're
cartoons.
We're semi-railed.
We're monorailed.
Monorail.
Somebody say monorail.
We're Ogdenville on the map.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious
science.
Now, the first story isn't the Stephen Hawking thing. I don't know if we're doing this right.
Why? You mean if it isn't the
if
one?
It isn't,
or
isn't. Isn't.
Well,
that is the first one.
Okay, good. I just wanted to be predictive on that one. I thought that's going to be the top science story of the whole show. Go ahead.
It's pretty much who would have ever thought, you know, this is one of those that only is in, you know, the only thing I think that you would have expected to hear before Stephen Hawking teaming up with the Russian billionaire to launch a mission to Alpha Centauri is if you heard that Tony Stark was working with Elon Musk to, I don't know, get, you know, to send a probe to Jupiter or something. No, so yeah, Stephen Hawking has teamed up with Russian billionaire Yuri Milner and announced the official launch of, it's called Starshot, a space exploration initiative centered around a postage stamp sized satellite called Starship. Get it? You know, it's a Starship.
Hopefully it won't become Starscream.
Designed to listen for alien life. The idea is they'll power them. Alpha Centauri is 4.3 light years away from Earth, which means that it is trillions of miles. And so that it would take to send anything of size would take a long time. And you think about, there's all the normal concerns, you know, how would you put enough fuel and so on. The idea with these postage stamp sized satellites is that you can power them by shooting a laser at them from Earth. And so they can be tiny and you can accelerate them up to, I believe they're wanting to accelerate them up to about a fifth of the speed of light, which means that they could be there in like 20 years. Which is not a small amount of time, but compared to if you tried to do a typical, you know, it takes us 18 months to get something to Mars, right? So to get something to, that's not even out of our, that's in our neighborhood. And so that's their idea, is that they can accelerate these up to speed. You know, I wonder if maybe you launch them from some kind of rocket so that you're pushing them up to speed and then you use these lasers to power them to, go along. Milner made his money investing in Silicon Valley stuff. And so his idea behind this is taking the Silicon Valley approach to space exploration. It has the tiny satellite technology is half of the equation. The other half is an ultra lightweight light sail. That's what the laser would push. So they would have a little tiny sail, and when the laser light hit that would push it. That actually can push the craft ahead.
And each one would have a little tidy boat man.
Now the real story was Vox, who outed Stephen Hawking as a Russian billionaire by their misuse of an Oxford comma. They said, Stephen Hawking, comma, a Russian billionaire, comma, and Mark Zuckerberg want to send tiny spaceships to help us Atari. Like,
nice. The thing about it, so they've announced it. Well, that means they've started.
Wait a minute. Hold on. I got to go back to this because without the Oxford comma, Stephen Hawking would be both a Russian billionaire and Mark Zuckerberg.
No, it would have been Stephen Hawking, comma, a Russian billionaire and
Mark Zuckerberg. Yes.
No, that would have been proper.
Yeah, it would mean that he was both of them.
That would have been just as wrong. It would have meant he's both of them. The Oxford comma is always correct and never wrong.
I agree.
We're going to fight right here, Jay.
So how would you say that sentence? So you say the comma was right. The comma was supposed to be there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
Well, unfortunately, there's no way to have an ordered list in English like that and not introduce some ambiguity. There's no way to do it. There's no other way to construct that sentence.
Unless you use a lot of ands.
So you could modify it to say something like, Stephen Hawking is partnering with a Russian billionaire and Mark Zuckerberg.
Yes.
Or you could say, Stephen Hawking, and there's no other way to do it. If you're going to put it in a
you could just
list
use
with
ands
commas,
every time.
But I always thought you had to use and for the last object in the sentence.
Even if you can
without the comma.
No, you should.
What are you, a writer or something?
The Oxford comma
nine
is.
Are you still capitalizing W and Web since the latest AP thing?
Yes. And
I
and
two
internet.
Spaces after a period.
No, we don't do that. 9 times out of 10, an Oxford comma will reduce ambiguity rather than introduce it. But
there's two perspectives. One is that the comma is an and the other one is that the comma is a pause in natural speech. The Oxford comma represents a pause, where commas are pauses, whereas in the other way, it's like people say, no, a comma is an and. So if you put the Oxford comma in, it's like saying John, Anne, Sue, and
Well, it separates
Becky.
Both.
It's supposed to be a pause and
it separates
separate
objects.
Lists.
Yeah.
It's a pause.
Comma,
it's like a pause in natural
without
speech.
Science!
You can have a clause that modifies an object rather than it being a separate object.
Word nerds.
Just go for semicolons. That's the best thing.
I guess I need to make a new bumper for grammar Nazis. Heil! But invoking Godwin's law regularly.
Oh, and we've taken us out.
All you gotta do is say Godwin's law, and then out comes the hook.
All intelligent debate ends.
Well, it was fun while it lasted.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Technology Bites. We've still got a couple of fundraising free shows coming your way, but consider that it is coming. So if you want to go to kpft.org and make a donation in the tip jar, you can help us out in advance of the upcoming fundraiser. All right, well, we're going to get out of here. Thanks for tuning in. You've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Groovehouse.
KPFT invites you to a celebration of the acclaimed program Democracy Now! And the extraordinary movements and heroes who have moved our country forward. So join us for a visit by Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! On Sunday, May 1st at 1 p.m. Amy Goodman will speak in Houston at the Carl Walker Jr. Multi-Service Center, located at 4300 Noble Street. Visit kpft.org or our Facebook event page for full details. You're encouraged to purchase tickets early because this event is expected to be at capacity. So visit kpft.org for tickets. Proceeds from this visit by Amy Goodman benefit KPFT Houston.
Today's the day. You, a family member, or your ex has an old vehicle in your garage. It needs to go. So why not clear up some headaches and do something good for yourself and the city in the process? Just call 855-KPFT-CAR now. We'll arrange to come take the vehicle out of your hands. Not running? That's okay. We'll have it towed away at no cost to you. You'll get a tax deduction and, even better, not have to worry about it ever again. Just call 855-KPFT-CAR right now. Don't wait. There's no time like the present. 855-KPFT-CAR to donate that vehicle this hour. Thanks. This is KPFT Houston.